This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hi, this is Peter Ganry, and this is Friday, the 28th of May, 2021. Not much is going on in my area of the financial markets. Yields are on the rise. We have quite a bit of action in commodities, I would say. As I say here on slide two on the slide deck, U.S. technology stocks, we really need a catalyst, or else likely we could turn lower. You can just feel the energy is being sucked out of equities. And my interpretation is that there is a sense of where are we going from here on inflation. And you know, the numbers we're coming that are coming in are the last data points with the biggest amount of base effects we can have. So let me give you an example. So we have Germany import prices coming out today for April, and they're showing a 10.3% rise year on year, beating expectations. It's the highest print since 2000 for the German economy in terms of input pressure. It coincides with the biggest easing on prices back in April last year. So I think for every single month from now on, we'll get a grip on what is the severity of this inflation. And I think that will be the key thing to watch in equities. But if we're not getting a positive catalyst soon, I think this is that's a short sell on equities. I just want to highlight before we go to yields here on what's going on in yields, because they are climbing in the US again. I just want to point out that the so-called Reddit army, so the meme stocks traders, are back in business, with AMC Entertainment yesterday jumping massively. I've put in a weekly chart here on slide three. There were almost $19 billion worth of shares traded yesterday in AMC Entertainment. Number two, and that rarely happens, Tesla is by far the most traded stock every single day in the US equity market. But yesterday, AMC Entertainment took the crown. And I just want to put out here that it looks fun, but it is not fun. I mean, there's real money at stake. There's a lot of volatility. I can really only encourage at least our own clients, for all of those that are listening, that this is a very, very dangerous game to be playing. And don't put too much of your money up for this if this is just for seeking some fun. So stay careful out there. But Althea, let's get to you, because there's a lot of things going on in treasuries with the yields rising, and you've been in here on slide four. You are commenting on the auctions from yesterday.
Yeah, Peter, I think we should take a step back and talk about yesterday that we were saying that we see these very high demand in U.S. treasury auctions. And I suspect that this high demand comes from the fact that we see this tsunami of liquidity in the money market that now is leaking towards longer dated maturities. So by looking at the success of the 5-year and the 7-year auction yesterday, it looks like investors are not really much concerned about inflation rising. However, if we look at US Treasury yields, and they are rising, and they are telling a totally different story, because obviously we have PCA deflator numbers coming out today, and also we have Biden presenting the stimulus package. So there is still the risk that the reflation story is going to take up these yields. But just quickly on the auction of yesterday, the 7-year note auction was the most successful this year in this maturity. And I say that because I'm not sure if you remember, but in February, we had the disastrous 7-year auctions where we barely see basically foreign investors coming to buy U.S. treasuries. But yesterday, the bid to cover was the best since last summer. And also demand, foreign investors demand was the highest since the beginning of the year. So I think that everything points that the demand is supported, but it can quickly change if we have like a surprise today in PCE.
All right. Before we talk about Italy, Althea, I want to bring you into the conversation. Well, Althea mentioned the big stimulus package from Biden yesterday, a $6 trillion for the coming fiscal year that starts October the 1st. in the US, and it's a 5% increase from the 2021 expected level. And that goes to the whole commodity story, Ole. So the State Council in China likely, you know, trying to clamp down on commodity prices because a lot of their industries that are taking these input costs are suffering or bleeding a lot of money. But the wider question, which is also Goldman Sachs is asking, and I think that's a lead into you, is that is China actually in control of these commodity prices any longer? Because with all the stimulus in Europe and especially in the US, we have a different marginal buying dynamics and not only China being the big game. So can you take us through what's going on actually?
Absolutely, Peter, and I think some of the slides that we've shown in some of the podcasts this week basically highlighted this lack of ability to control some of the more international traded commodities, especially industrial metals, something like copper, while some of the bulks, steel, iron ore, they've dropped by more than 20% earlier this month. We only saw a 9% correction in copper, and that correction now seems to be over. Already, we've seen a very, very strong bounce yesterday. As you said, Goldman's came out with a report basically saying, well, this is not just about China anymore. This is about a pickup in global demand from the Western world, Europe and the US. And that's likely to continue to keep this market supported because if we have rising demand at a time where the supply is quite inelastic and needs time to catch up, then prices will be forced higher. And on slide 7, you can basically just see the performance during the past week, and you can see we got gains almost across the board, led by crude oil. We had a very strong day in oil markets yesterday, and again the market is focusing on the recovery we're seeing in mobility, in the, especially in the US right now. And at the same time, the market's just taking a bit of a wait and see approach to the Iran-US nuclear negotiations. So generally a strong week. Also, just adding, if you see, take a look at copper, it's retraced more than half of its recent 9% correction. Part of that is due to supply worries in Chile, where wage negotiations are currently taking place at BHP. They operate some of the biggest mines, copper mines in the world. So that's a story that's unfolding. I just say on slide 7, also just insert one of the biggest commodity tracking ETFs, the DBC. It's you can see how the market has already, the commodity space as a whole has already recouped more than half of that that drop we saw recently.
And also in Chile, the new leftist government is talking about imposing special taxes on the copper industry. So we'll be watching what's going on in that space. And talking about a country and taxes, Italy and Greece also have high taxes, it'll say, but that's probably not what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about the yields in Europe, in the periphery.
Peter, I think that it's something very surprising happened in May, and it is that 10 years Italian BTP yields now are pricing above the one of Greece. This is why I believe that today is going to be very important how Italy is going to be able to sell the 5 and 10 years BTPs. I think that is going to be a very big success for the country, because now Italy is the only country that provides a positive yield starting from 4 years. So it's going to attract all those money from those savers that wants to avoid negative yielding rates on deposits. And also on the long term, Italy 30 years is trading around 2% in yields. And if you take investment grade euro denominated bonds, I'm talking about corporate bonds, they provide around 1.3% in yields. So basically you get exposure to sovereign debt and you get paid quite well. In slide number 5 though, I just wanted to show you, I really like to see always Italy, Greece versus US Treasury yields edged with 3 months forward, because it just shows you that the higher yielding securities or government bonds in Italy are slightly pricing now above US Treasury. It makes basically all other bonds in the euro area overpriced, such as Spain, Portugal, France.
Interesting stuff, Altea. To me, one of the big stories or crucial stories to for peripheral European government bonds and, you know, the economy as a whole in Europe is whether we can have a good tourism season. And I think there's still a lot of uncertainty at this point in time, how fast we can roll out these vaccinations and to what extent we'll have an adequate and good COVID-19 passport, because I think it's so crucial for Greece and Italy. But I guess it's for another day and another discussion, but it's worth having in mind. And Ole, you and I, we have to talk about a little bit about logistics, because we had a very big IPO in Hong Kong, first day of trading today. But before we talk about that one, it's linked to what's going on slide six, where you've put in the latest developments on container freight rates. Take it away.
Yeah, as you can see here on slide six, basically we've seen this very big move higher in container rates over the past year, and then it just continues. So there's still a lot of congestion, a lot of blocks in the system, and it's basically driving prices higher. And we just inserted one of the world's biggest shipping container shipping companies, Maersk, and you can see this phenomenal rally they've had since the bottom last year, and it just continues to add inflationary pressures. And as you mentioned in the beginning, Peter, it's part of the story whether this is going to be a transition area or not. These increases are not really expected to disappear until probably into next year. So we're going to continue to see high costs of transporting goods around the world for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and a lot of what have happened there, of course, is this. There's the supply side, and there's the continuous disruptions of ports, and you have still the pandemic unfolding, but it's also the what have happened over the past 18 months is just an explosion in demand for e-commerce, and e-commerce is driving logistics. And the big question here is whether a lot of these shipping companies and the yards that are you know, producing or making these massive container ships, whether they can produce them fast enough relative to the surging demand for e-commerce. I think that's one of the big questions we'll have to get an answer on over the next year. And one of the companies that have really benefited from this rising e-commerce demand is JD Logistics, which is basically a spin-off from JD.com, one of the largest e-commerce companies in China, and it reminds very much of Amazon, because they have a lot more of the overall infrastructure and own inventory, whereas Alibaba is more a platform that facilitates as a middleman. JD Logistics and JD.com is much more like Amazon, and JD Logistics have been valued at $34 billion, just had the first day of trading. It started at 14% above the IPO. The IPO, they raised $3.2 billion. So it was a very successful trading. And now that this one is trading, we will early next week launch our logistics basket. And I've put in on slide eight a small insert there as well on the LNG e-commerce logistics ETF, a UCITS fund here in Europe that's trading in Amsterdam and Milano and in London. And you can see here that it's just up and up for these logistic companies. And they're very profitable. They're really riding the tailwind. It's the same story as Maersk. On slide nine, next week's earnings releases, it's probably the weakest or the thinnest earnings release week we have had quite some time. On Tuesday, we have Zoom Video Communications. On Wednesday, we have Splunk, which is in the cybersecurity area. Zoom, obviously, on Tuesday is interesting because of the big tailwind they had from the pandemic. Can they keep riding that? And the same goes for Lululemon, which has been riding this wave of people doing much more at-home physical activity, yoga, physical exercise in all manners. And they have been doing quite well, but can they continue to do that? And then you have DocuSign, which is part of the most speculative pockets of the market. And then Salesforce reported earnings yesterday. They beat on revenue and earnings for their Q1. They are putting out a guidance for Q2, which is better than expected, both on revenue and earnings per share. And they are expecting the Slack Technologies acquisition to be done by Q2, and that it will contribute around $500 million of revenue this year. And then next year, it will contribute fully, including its growth, so not much closer to $1.6 billion of revenue for Salesforce right there. As you can see on the share price in slide nine, they have been struggling for a couple of quarters in getting momentum. So let's see where it goes on this earnings release. And I don't think there's much to say on the macro calendar. We have a little bit of US personal income and spending data for April at 12:30 GMT. Otherwise, I think it's in your area, Altea, with the PEG deflator and how that impacts break-even rates. And then in terms of next week, we have the non-farm payroll coming up. We have a lot of PMIs, both for the services and the manufacturing sectors around the world. And we have an RBA rate decision on Tuesday. And on Tuesday also, we have South Korean exports. It's a funny number, but I like to watch that because it's such a leading indicator on the global economy. And I think that's a wrap. Thank you for listening, and stay safe and have a great weekend when you get there. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.